Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Work Hour podcast. This is episode 45, can you believe? Today we're in for a very special treat. You've heard us talk about tiny desk concerts, but this is the lead up, the practice session leading up to a tiny desk concert. And we're very fortunate to have Wei Ling Fong, who is doing a work in progress towards defending her dissertation for her PhD. So what she will do, she will give a presentation that she has so far, and then at the end, Creative Work Hour members will give some feedback for her. This is a special treat. Alessandra, do you have any thoughts before we begin?
I'm good. I'm anxious to hear the work that, for as long as we have known Wei Ling, she has been working on this PhD. So it's very exciting for all of us. Wei Ling, I hand it over to you.
Thank you. Good morning and good afternoon to everyone here. Thank you for being here to support my very first rough presentation of my dissertation. So March 2025 marks 5 years since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Around this time, 5 years ago, most education institutions in the United States and around the world had to transition into emergency remote teaching due to the lockdown. And at this time, most institutions had no choice but to shift to fully online. Faculty were under intense pressure. They had little time to prepare for their online instructions. Students were confused. And in response, many centers for teaching and learning rushed to create emergency online faculty training to support faculty. This moment in history was a moment of disruption and rapid adaptation. At George Mason University, we are no different. When the pandemic hit, during spring break, we went into emergency lockdown on March 17, and very quickly, the Center for Teaching and Learning at George Mason created the Online Course Design Primer as a way to support Mason's faculty to transition online. The primary goal of this module was to help faculty learn best practices in online teaching, gain confidence in building an online course, and to become more independent as they navigate this very uncertain territory. While the pandemic shaped my research, the idea for this research question came really much later when I had the opportunity to reflect on how unique this moment was in higher education. We knew that many faculty members enrolled in the online course design primer. And then over the years, we transitioned from online to hybrid and now back to in-person. And for the past 2 years, I kept asking myself, how did participation in the online course design primer influence faculty's teaching practices over the long term? I found this to be a very unique question because for the first time, the Stern Center for Teaching and Learning had to support an unprecedented number of faculty who sign up. And this has never happened before. And my question was really, with this big group of faculty signing up for this course, what is happening and how has it impacted their teaching practices in modern day? And also from my research, I understand that there is a significant gap that usually happens after training ends. And most professional development training are focused on short-term evaluations. They are focused on their initial reaction and satisfaction. They tend to be quantitative because these evaluations have to be quick. However, they tend to neglect the longer-term effects of a program. And there's also a lack of behavioral and organizational impact, as well as taking out the contextual factors, like, for example, post-training environment or support that really goes to evaluate how effective a training is. However, long-term evaluations offer more potential to understand the longer-term influence. For example, it's always designed as multiple touchpoints assessments. It means that we check in with faculty not only after the training, but maybe a few months down the road or even a few years. It's designed to assess sustained impact on their teaching skills, identify long-term changes, and it there's also the possibility to understand if there is an impact on organization and institution culture. So how I go about to conduct my dissertation research is that I opted for a longitudinal qualitative case study that is exploratory, because this is a very new phenomenon. It's intrinsic because it is driven by my own motivations to understand the case. And I'm using data from 2021 and 2024. The research site is entirely here at George Mason, and I use thematic analysis to understand the data. As a novice researcher, I needed a framework to help me make sense of the data. And I opt to go with Kirkpatrick Evaluation Model, which is a common program evaluation methodology that is used in both academic and non-academic. So very broadly, it looks at four levels of a training. The first level examines if the learners have a good favorability from the training. The second level asks if the training was successful in terms of transferring knowledge. The third level asks if the training made any changes in the behavior. And finally, level four evaluates if the training made any difference on the bigger organizational impact. So going back to my research question, which is how did participation in the online course design primer influence faculty's teaching practices over the long term? I look at the first three levels, and I will also explain that level four is not included in my study because this is the scope is too big. And I'm only focusing on faculty's teaching practices, and that's why I'm focusing only on the first three levels. So to tailor it closer to the model, I ask in level one, how did participants respond to the online course design primer? Level two, what knowledge or skills did they gain from the online course design primer? And level three, how have they applied their learning to their current teaching practices today? I have overall four data sources. So for context, on the far left, the OCDP was launched in the summer of 2021. Summer of 2020. In 2021, the Stern Center actually conducted their very own post-program evaluation called the Extended Assessment Interview. And I'm very fortunate to be able to get my hands on this data to look at it. It's both closed-ended with structured questions and open-ended qualitative interviews, and these are all self-reported. And then in 2024, I decide to conduct interviews with the same participants from 2021, also qualitative interviews. And for additional data sources, I reach out to the facilitators from the online course design primer, as well as writing my own researcher's memo to track the evolution of my thinking. In total, the number of participants that sign up for the 2024 interviews were 14 participants. And their motivations to participate in the online course design primer was they had no prior online teaching experience and they wanted to learn how to teach online. Now, there were three modules that were offered in 2020. However, I'm only selecting participants who did the summer and the fall of 2020 because these were modules, these two modules shared the same amount of modules. They were seven modules. The earlier module had only five. So to standardize the same experience, only the fall and the summer were selected. And these participants come from all different rankings across the university, as well as they were teaching they come from different disciplines. Very broadly, my research phase is divided into four. In phase one, I call this the familiarization with the initial data. Because the 2021 data did not come from me, I needed to really make sure that I understand what I was looking for. So what I did was I conducted the first cycle coding with all the participants. There were a number of 36 participants from both summer and fall. So this through inductive coding, which is a bottoms-up approach, I get to just get a sense of what participants were talking about and just get to know who they are. Now, when I move to phase two, this is when I start my data collection. I have to also say, at this point, I do not know who is going to respond to my call for interviews yet. But as after I conducted my interview reach out, and then when participants start to pour in, and what I did was I returned to the same participants in 2021 just to have the ability to compare their experiences in 2021 and 2024. And in phase two, I also conducted interviews with the facilitators. So in phase three, this is where I begin my data analysis using the Kirkpatrick evaluation model. I needed to make sure that I am staying loyal to the model and using the framework to understand what I'm looking at. I also conducted member checking, where I send the transcripts from 2024 to my participants and have them make sure that I'm quoting them correctly and I'm understanding their experiences, as well as conducting the triangulation with the modules from the OCDP and as well as the facilitators. And finally, in phase four, I integrated these multiple data points and I wrote the longitudinal patterns that I could see from both years. So the findings, very broadly, these were the reaction, the themes that emerged from level one. So when I asked participants how did they respond to the OCDP, they provided their satisfaction and their feedback. They also quoted three other elements that really tied in to communicate why it was favorable to them. So the first one, participants in both years reported that the OCDP was well organized and they appreciated the timing. They also clarified that it helped them with their online teaching practices, as well as they value the templates and resources. However, one of the feedback that they provided was that they were frustrated with the workload and the tedious assignment. When it comes to facilitators, they highly value the timely feedback that was provided. They also mentioned that the support was personalized rather than giving a very generic blanket feedback. And this helped them to really create individual courses that help their students. And finally, they also mentioned that facilitators were well available beyond the OCDP, and they really appreciate this. They mentioned that the course content was highly relevant because it helped them, the OCDP provided a reliable model that they can emulate in their own teaching. And it also helped them as online learners to understand what students were going through, and that really helped them to become better online instructors. And finally, they mentioned that learning through community was a highly valued experience because first, it made them felt less alone. They enjoyed the engagement with their peers because it allowed them to ask questions and get feedback from each other. And more importantly, they were learning with others in the same discipline. Yeah. Anyway, I decided to stop here because I realized it's only 5 minutes left. Yeah, so I think even though there's more, let's just have a discussion. Yeah.
Thank you. That was absolutely wonderful, Wei-Ling. What a great presentation. We're going to go around the room and ask for any feedback to Wei-Ling's presentation. If we could just keep it to the content of the presentation. And Alessandra, I'll keep it short, just a couple of sentences. Alessandra, do you have any feedback?
I'm going to leave the floor for everybody else here because I got to talk to Wiling a little earlier.
Hillary, feedback, questions?
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Wei-Ling. That was fantastic. What I liked was, I want to say, the simplicity of what you're telling us. I understood what you were saying, and I appreciated that. You gave context to the value of this by looking at it in this way. You were bringing that up at the beginning. And I loved that, you know, how people don't look at these long-term effects and, you know, lifestyle changes that can happen from these things being present. And the presentation, yeah, good info.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Hilary. Devon, thoughts or feedback?
Sure, I would just say that Something we've talked a lot about in this group on various topics is the importance of story, that we all sort of learn things better and pay closer attention when it is in the form of a story. And this was, and I know that because when you had to stop, I was disappointed. I want to say, but what happens? So, yeah, great job, Wiley.
Thank you, Devin. Michael, thoughts or feedback?
Yeah, I agree with what was said before about that it was a nice story, and I wonder if it's relevant to bring something forward, to give a little bit more of a taste of the conclusions, maybe at the beginning, I don't know, to grab something. I mean, I know it's kind of an academic context a bit more, so maybe the expectation is kind of like, okay, questions, methodology, data, analysis, results, conclusions, but I feel on it can still be valuable to kind of bring something ahead of time, a short summary overall with some engagement of also of the conclusions up front could be also engaging.
Thank you. Thank you. I like that. Yeah.
Thank you, Michael. Bobby, thoughts, feedback?
The amount of time you spent discussing each slide versus the content on each slide was really good. Also, none of the slides were had too much contextual information or complication such that my mind was now trying to understand the slide versus hearing you. There was a really nice balance between level of content, level of use of color, and graphics relative to what you were saying. So I really love that. As to how you shorten it, that'll be interesting. Because like I said, it was just really, really well done. I didn't get to hear the very beginning, but as Michael said, there might be that little, I'm going to talk, basically, I'm going to be talking about this. I'm going to touch on the findings along the way, both including unexpected and twists, and maybe something really brief, but as pointed out, this is an academic presentation. They're expecting the academic presentation, and you're doing it great. And I'll touch on what Devin said. There's a beautiful level of inflection in your voice when you're talking about this that doesn't sensationalize or turn it into storytelling, but yet is enough that the audience is understanding the emotions in your words where they matter. So end to end, I think, yeah, you've really got a great one going here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby. Gretchen, do you have any thoughts or feedback?
Pretty late, so I missed caught just the end.
Thank you. Sharon, do you have any thoughts or feedback for Wailing?
No, I think the presentation was great.
Thank you, Sharon. Shadows, any thoughts or feedback?
I came in a bit late. What I heard sounded good. Wasn't paying too much attention to the slides. For the most part, I either listen or I read. In this case, I was listening, so it sounded good.
Wailing, I appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable and open yourself up for feedback from everybody. It's very brave of you. I really enjoyed the content. And I'm going to have to try and hit you up for those slides because they were absolutely beautiful. I know that on the podcast you can't see the slides, but they were some super duper slides. The colors, the contrasts, the way that they were laid out, that was great. Alessandra, closing thoughts?
Well, and I grabbed all of the slides that I know that there's the time is a ticking between now and the time that Wiling does this presentation for the committee in just a few days' time. So I grabbed the ones that if we have the leisure of time to look at something together, I grabbed some of those slides so that we can just give them a little tweak. What I found as a designer who's also gone through the teaching and learning education things with for professors and educators is that the more that you can unify how the information looks from slide to slide to slide to slide, the more quickly that it can be parsed out and more quickly the learner, in this case, your learner is the committee, the more quickly the learner can encode that information. And because what we're doing is when we're learning, we're throwing things into a couple of buckets. One is, I know that already. And the other is, oh, what am I learning here? And so when you unify the graphic design across the slides, it makes it really, really easy and fast to throw the information that's coming in. Like, I know that, I know that, I know that. I'm going to look at that one. I know that, I know that, I know that. I'm going to grab that one. So if I can help with that, that'll be. And it's always fun. What was really fun, Greg and everyone, is that Wailing went to, she presented on graphic design for the presentation of academic posters. And that was only 2 weeks ago, right? Wasn't it, Wailing? And so we went through what she was going to present in the same way. So she and I already know how to work together really quickly on academic slides. So how do you feel right now, Wailing?
Yeah, I feel like so I think I was presenting about 15 minutes. Was I about that? I think it's gonna be so tight. Like even if I were to given 25 minutes. So I think my challenge now is like more succinct. Like yeah, I gotta think about it. Yeah. That's my concern.
Well, we appreciate you for this portion. This is the first section of what we are doing to celebrate your becoming not just becoming more you, but literally your name changing to Wailing Fong to Wailing Fong, comma PH frickin' D. So we're gonna just pause the recording right there so that we can get on with Creative Work Hour. But let's give our girl a hand. Yay!
Oh, thank you
It's
so much.
a lot of visual applause. A lot of visual applause.
Well, it happened again. You wasted some perfectly good time listening to the Creative Podcast, but watch out for the second installment of this presentation.